The story that redefined fear.
Hello?
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 Is back.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Two girls killed the exact day of the anniversary of the infamous Woodsboro murders.
On April 15th.
This whole situation is under control.
Getting scared.
This isn't a comedy. It's a horror film.
Has never been this much fun.
Should have seen the look on your face.
Scream 4. Rated R.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 23 of Craven Craven, the podcast about all things Wes Craven. My name is Patrick Bromley, joined, as always, by my Craven Craven co-host, Heather Wixon. Hi, Heather.
Hello.
This is our penultimate episode of Craven Craven. This is the last Craven Craven film because we're talking about Scream 4, the last film directed by Mr. Wes Craven from 2011.
It's weird because, like, when I revisited this a few days ago, I got really emotional. And it was like the 1-2 punch of it being Wes's last film and our last, like, regular episode of Craven Craven.
Right.
And
good
it
thing
was
we
like,
have one more, though.
I know. We're going to do a big fun wrap up for everybody. But, like, I was just like, oh, God. This is it. And then it hit me and I was like, and this was it for Wes. And like,
Did we start doing this like before COVID?
No, I think we started in COVID.
During COVID? Okay. I honestly have no idea how long we've been doing this.
Like 20 years, who knows?
Longer than I think.
Yeah. Like as we were talking about time earlier, like, I don't know anymore. It could be 2 months, it could be 2 years, it could be 2 decades at this point.
Well, this should be an interesting conversation because I know what a big fan of this movie you are.
From day one, it's weird. It's like, I know, like, we've had our little back and it's like been our thing since, like, we started doing podcasts together with our back and forth about Scream 4.
Yeah.
And here we are.
And the world has finally caught up with you, I think.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to have that vindication, but also, like, what was wrong with you people back then?
Where were you fuckers in 2011?
Yeah, you too, Patrick. You know.
I was harder on this movie than I should have been in 2011. I'm still not where you are on Scream 4. But
I get it.
There's a lot of stuff I like about it that I don't think I gave it credit for. And I think, honestly, part of that, and I give you credit for seeing it as far back as 13 years ago, but I think part of it is this movie was ahead of its time in terms of some of the stuff that it's talking about. And I needed to catch up to that like the rest of the world.
Yeah, and I get it. You know, sometimes it's like, I always worry, like, if my knee-jerk reactions to things is just that, but it's nice that I've spent a lot of hours watching Scream 4 over the years, but it's just one of those things where every time I finish I'm like, okay, I was kind of okay, like, I was spot on with this. Like, and I'm not gonna say it's a perfect movie because you and I were having a funny text about that yesterday, but
yeah.
I think that the good far, far, far outweighs the bad in this.
Yeah.
Do you want to do your little intro thing and then we'll probably dive in?
Sure. Let me read the plot synopsis from Joey on IMDb.
Thanks, Joey. Shout out, Joey.
Thank you, Joey. Hold on. I'm going to see if I can. I'm seeing if Joey has other. Whoa. Joey has. What is this? Why is Joey hyperlinked? Has Joey, like, done the plot synopses for all these films? Yeah, it looks like it. Anyway, all right. Sidney Prescott, now the author of a self-help book, returns home to Woodsboro on the last stop of her book tour. There, she reconnects with Sheriff Dewey and Gail, who are now married, as well as her cousin Jill and her aunt Kate. Unfortunately, Sydney's appearance also brings about the return of Ghostface, putting Sydney, Gale, and Dewey, along with Jill and her friends and the whole town of Woodsboro, in danger. You know what else kind of makes Scream 4 look better? Is Scream 5. Which isn't to say that Scream 5 is bad, but I think Scream 5 is reworking a lot of the same
stuff from Scream 4.
Yeah.
The sort of like real-time video sort of aspects of it. Like it takes a lot, it takes a lot of the foundation of Scream 4 and kind of brings it 10 years forward.
Right. Right. Just the idea of bringing in sort of a new class of characters. And I'm not saying I like Scream 5. I'm not saying that to diss Scream 5, because there's things that I think Scream 5 does a little bit better than Scream 4 also. But like the whole notion of trying to marry the OG cast with a new cast, you know, Scream 5 is doing that. The idea of, and I don't want to spoil too much of Scream 5, but like the idea of sort of these... it's a little bit different in terms of what it's talking about with obsessed fans versus like kids who just want to be famous. Scream 4 is kind of talking about both in a way that I think gets a little bit messy. And we should mention up front, this was a very sort of tumultuous production. You had script changes. Whoa. You had Kevin Williamson's script being heavily rewritten by Aaron Kruger, one of my least favorite working screenwriters, the man responsible for the genius of Scream 3. You had cast members dropping out because of the script changes. You had Hayden Panettiere, who was like arguably the MVP of Scream 4, almost quitting because of the script changes. So there was this was a rough production.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't like Aaron Kruger just win an Oscar or something?
Oh gosh, I hope not. I mean, it's possible. Not that I can think of.
Hold on.
Yeah, you could be right.
Oh no, he was a nominee for Top Gun Maverick.
Oh wow.
I know, right? When I saw his name, I was like, wait, really? I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I have this theory. I mean, that most of what works work. What's that?
Maybe people just get better.
Maybe. I think most of what works about Top Gun Maverick is Christopher McQuarrie, his work, but I could be wrong. Maybe it's all Aaron Kruger.
I mean, I would never say that, but you know, I mean, maybe people just do get better at their work. Like I look at the writing that I did when I first started out, and it pains me that it's out there.
100% people get better, but I look at Aaron Kruger's resume and tell me he has gotten better. It's a lot of Transformers movies. It's that Ghost in the Shell with Scarlett Johansson. It's the best movie on his resume is arguably The Ring remake, and that's not even a movie I love.
Yeah.
But whatever.
I mean, he did do, I'm looking now because I'm like, what else has he done? I don't remember disliking Skeleton Key.
I never saw Skeleton Key. And I'm a Reindeer Games fan, and he wrote Reindeer Games. Like, I'm not saying that his resume is worthless. I just know that he's a little hacky. And so bringing him in to rewrite Kevin Williamson, I think, was a mistake, but one of many mistakes that the Weinsteins made in the production.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Four. Yeah, I mean, well, didn't he come in on 3 too?
Yeah, he's, I think, credited on 3.
I think he was
3.
I think they threw out Kevin Williamson's original script for 3 and just started over.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering that correctly. So, yeah. I mean, if nothing else, at least they had somebody coming back in who'd been there. If we have to find that little nugget of positivity, that's that. You know, I mean, they could have called me. I'm right here. But, you know, they didn't. I said I wanted to work with the Weinsteins. But, you know, there are definitely, like, again, it's one of those things, like, I think people think, like, oh, if something's your favorite movie or, oh, if you love something, like, pointing out its faults is somehow detracting from your love of something. And, like, to me, that's stupid because, like, nothing is perfect in this world. Humans aren't perfect. Art is not perfect. like, it's okay to be like, this movie rules, but also like, it doesn't, there are things that bother me about it. But I think the things that it does get, like, the things that I love about it are so strong that I don't give a shit about the other things.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, you know.
Well, what are the things that you love about it? Let's start there.
I mean, honestly, like, let's just start at the beginning and talk about the opening. Because here's the thing, you're coming back after, what, 25 years at this point? 15 years, something like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have zero concept of time anymore, people. I apologize. My math is fuzzy, where I think 25 years in certain cases is like, really 35? I can't do math anymore. So you're having to come back, and at this point, you have to figure out what to say and how to change things. And like, we all know that the opening of Scream is like a huge deal. And if you don't nail that, like, nobody's in. And I think what they were able to do with the opening was pretty damn impressive, because I will tell you, I did not see it coming.
Right.
And I actually think that's like the thing that I love the most about Scream 6, is that I think that opening, like, and I said this in my review, and we talked about it on our podcast for Corpse Club, but literally like 2 minutes in, when that moment happens, I was like, holy shit. I loudly said, holy shit, loud enough that the girls next to me giggled.
The moment with the mask?
With the mask, yes. Okay. Because like, we've never seen that before.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So like, if you're going to come into a Scream movie, you got to figure out a way to mix things up enough. Like, I like the opening of 5 because it was familiar. It was like, okay, somebody's at home getting weird phone calls, but she's also getting texts and like, you know, playing on this idea of nobody answers their landlines anymore. Who even has a landline anymore? So I like, you know, I liked it, but 6 to me was like, oh shit, we're doing something here. And for me, 4 was like one of these moments where like, I'm settling in. I don't even typically love, I'm totally blank, it's from the opening is
Lucy Hale and Shanae Grimes, who are two actors that I'm told are famous.
I interviewed Lucy Hale. I think she was in that Fantasy Island movie.
Oh yeah, she totally was. Yeah.
So I interviewed her.
Okay.
So that opening was fine or whatever, but when we get to the Kristen Bell and Anna Paquin, that was like, somebody read my diary and was like, Heather, who are two awesome actresses from sort of the genre world that you would love to see together. And I'm like, give me Kristen Bell and Anna Paquin. And there they were.
Yeah.
And then you see like Kristen Bell, like, and again, spoilers, guys.
Yes,
you know, we're going to get there. But like, yes. Like, and then Anna Paquin, or Kristen Bell, literally just leans over and stabs Anna Paquin. And I was like, what the shit is happening? I was like, what? Because like, if you remember the marketing, it was like this whole thing about them bringing in Anna Paquin and Kristen Bell and Amy Teagarden and Adam Brody from OC. It was like all of these things that I loved outside of horror coming into horror. I mean, Anna Paquin, of course, yes, she did Trick or Treat. But like, I knew her from the X-Men movies at that point, and she was just a few years into True Blood. Like, right. You know, Kristen Bell, like, oh my God, I loved Veronica Mars. So like all of these like things that were from outside of horror coming into here, like Hayden Panettiere, like I loved Heroes season 1. Season 2, I made it 2 episodes and I was out. which I think is very apropos considering we're in the middle of a writer's strike.
I was going to say, that's what killed Heroes. And
yeah. And here we are. And like, so it was like all these things that like I appreciated from outside horror coming into this little sandbox that I already love. And I was like, oh my God. And then like that happens. And I was like, wait, what? What is happening here? Like the first fake, I was like, oh, that was clever. And then I thought we were on our way. And it was like, you know, Wes was like, nope, we're going to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, and then we're going to give you the real opening. So like, to me, I felt like that opening was just like, it was like kicking the door open again and being like, Scream is back.
I'm going to say something a little bit shitty, and I'm going to.
It's okay. That's your job.
I love the opening. I love the double fake out. I wish that the real opening was a little better is the, yeah, more impactful. Maybe it was interesting because I watched the deleted scenes on the Blu-ray, and I think they were right to reshoot it because I don't think that the original conception totally works. Part of my issue is, as somebody who doesn't know a ton about a lot of maybe modern TV, or I don't know. I don't like Amy Teagarden and Britt Robertson are actors that I recognize, but they don't mean that much to me. So part of me is like, oh, you need to go bigger, not smaller. But also the execution, and this is my overarching thesis with Scream 4, is that it has a lot of cool ideas that aren't always expertly executed. So when we get to the real opening, it almost needs to be better, or as you said, more impactful than the previous two, and it isn't. And so I'm like, oh, okay, that was like the double fake out is great, but for this to really hit home, you need to land that third opening, and I don't think it quite does.
Yeah, and I don't totally disagree. I mean, I totally agree with your assessment, as the overall assessment. Yeah. But what I would say is that they're like, because as we go on to find out, like Jenny Randall is actually a pretty pivotal character in the relationship between Jill and Trevor.
Sure.
But
okay.
Like, we, you know what I mean? Because like yep. this, she, you know, Trevor cheats on Jill, which again, like a lot of these things that should matter more aren't really played up, and they're kind of tossed aside a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah.
You know? So like when they're driving in the car, when Hayden picks up, you know, when Kirby picks up Jill and Olivia, and she's like, why is Jenny Randall calling me? Like
yeah.
that little thing is an important moment that should have played more impactfully. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like there should have been something like, you know, this bitch, you know, sleeps with my boyfriend and like, she's calling me, like something, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like it's such an offhanded moment where like, unless you go back and watch the movie a few times, like you don't really know what that moment means.
And
so I totally get what you're saying.
I think that may be a function of the constant rewrites.
Yeah.
Do you know what
and
I mean?
It
like,
also too could just be like, again, real life, very rarely do we know these little like innocuous moments could actually mean so much too.
Yeah.
But it's a movie. We're looking for theatrical moments. So I totally get it. But yeah, it's also probably just due to rewrites. I might be just overthinking it. So, as they say in the movie, am I underthinking it?
for those who, I'm jumping out of order here, but for those who maybe didn't hear our award-winning Corpse Club episode on Scream 6, what are your thoughts on Kirby coming back?
I'm okay with it because, I mean, look, I literally bought a t-shirt from Amelie from Poltergeist and Paramore, who, by the way, if you're ever, for folks listening, if you're ever looking for super fun, sort of like not highly, like not produced in batches type of horror
yeah,
apparel,
right.
I love her site. I cannot wait to finally wear my Black Christmas sweater this year. But
it's great, but then somebody will ask you like, oh, where did you get that? And you'll tell them and like, you can't get it anymore.
Yeah. Which just makes me even cooler, actually. Sucks for you. Awesome for me.
Yeah.
But she's got, like, she does so many cool things. Like, she does, like, swimwear and, like, she's so freaking talented. But anyway, when she did her Kirby Lives t-shirt, like, I bought that, like, in the first 10 minutes of that sale. Because I loved Kirby. Kirby was, like, sort of like a really fun way to like make Randy not annoying. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
Where like it wasn't like she was ever telling people that they were like wrong for their opinions, where she was like, no, this is just who I am.
Right.
And I think in a lot of ways, like I always aspire to be the kind of horror fan that Kirby is.
Yeah.
And then of course the guys have to like oh my God, I cannot even believe that I'm blanking on
the non-Culkin guy,
Charlie. Yes, no. When Charlie like is trying to trivia her.
Oh,
like
right,
she has,
right.
And like she has to prove herself to some dude film bro.
Yeah,
which I'm like, of course. Right. I've never been there. I don't know. What that's like.
No, of course not. You no. never have to prove that you know something to a man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, not me. Never in the 15 plus years that I've been doing this. Never. I really liked her. And I actually really liked that they brought her back. I don't love the usage of her. It's a little strange.
I think that's what I mean more than just like, because I was so on board. I was like, I don't like when the internet writes movies, but I was also super on board with the idea of her coming back because I was such a fan of hers. Even when I liked this movie less than I do, she was not the reason. I was like all in on Kirby. But yeah, I'm with you that like the execution is maybe not the best.
Yeah. Yeah. So like for me, she was definitely a bright spot for the film. And I think there was something, I think we probably talked about this in like previous Craven episodes, or maybe we even talked about this in the Scream 6 episode. But like there was a clause that she had in her contract that she was not going to die on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know specifically if it was just like some actors don't like that. Like, I don't think you'll ever see Tom Cruise die in a movie, because I think that's something that's
Collateral, right? Doesn't he die in Collateral?
But we don't.
Spoilers, like, for Collateral.
Yeah, sorry, but it's not like a thing like where it's like explicit. Sure, like he kind of is holding his side and he puts his head down.
Right.
What is he? But like nobody declares him dead.
Sure. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, so there's certain actors out there who just don't do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And maybe because of where her like status, like at that point with like Heroes being as big as it was, and maybe just wanting to protect herself a little bit. But I'm pretty sure there was like a thing where she couldn't die on screen. So I think the way that they play like that whole scene, of course, sort of harkening back to Scream 1, was really smart.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly too, I think there was part of it probably was that if I were to guess, and I really wish, because this is the only movie that I ever got to talk to Wes for. And I got 10 glorious minutes with that man.
Nice.
And I made him count. But I really wish I had asked him more. Like, because everybody always wants to get, like, the sound bites to do their little, like, ooh, scoop. We find out what Wes Craven wants to do for Scream 5. Like, I'm not in the job to do that shit.
Yeah.
So I didn't ask. But in retrospect, as a fan, I wish I would have asked. If like his intention was like, well, maybe Kirby made it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I'd love to see what like his plan would have been for her, ultimately making her the new Sydney, you know?
Yeah, I'm so, on board for that.
Yeah, I would have been curious to see what that would have done. Yeah, so like, I'm very much a big fan of Kirby, although I will call bullshit on her horror movie collection. It's one shelf. There's maybe like 30 to 40 movies up there, including the box set at the end.
She's such a horror fan, though.
Like,
she has a whole shelf of movies.
I'll give her leeway because she's still in high school, so it's not like, I mean, not that she probably didn't have expendable income, because look at the house she lives in, but like, at the same time, like, you have one shelf of movies. So, you know. I don't know.
Her rattling off the list of remakes is maybe the best critique that the movie offers. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, again, shout out to Amma. That's all listed on the back of that Kirby Lives t-shirt. That nice. Whole monologue that she does.
Nice.
So I've had people ask me about it too. They're like, what? Why are all those? Like, and I'm like, oh, it's Kirby from Scream 4. And they look at me and I'm like, never mind. I've had people at work go like, why? What is that? And I'm just like, oh, you're so not cool. Yeah, so like I think the thing is, because you know, you have this movie coming back in to a time when remakes are happening en masse with horror. Like, I mean, Wes himself was literally producing Last House on the Left.
Right.
You know, Nightmare just happened. Like, we were in, you know, the flux of remakes at that point. So if you're going to sort of quote unquote do a remake, like, what are you going to say about it? And I think, you know, I would never call this a remake because it directly ties to the events of 1 through 3, and the original cast is in there playing themselves. So it's not really a remake.
No.
But it's not a requel like Scream 5.
Would you call it a shriequel or a screamake? Because that can never stop fucking off.
I almost want a t-shirt that has those terms on it, because I'd love to see who would get the deep cut.
Yeah.
Of that film class discussion. Where, you know, because, like, there's only about, like, 10 people, I think, they'd be like, oh, I know what that's from. Everybody else would be like, what are you talking about? Or they think I'd be making fun of Scream 5 or something.
Yeah.
Because I skipped 2-4. Right. Also, like, coolest cinema class ever? Or cinema club? Like, I've never seen a cinema club that, like, has, like, R-rated movie posters in there like sure. that. And it's mostly horror. And I like that one classroom is just as dedicated to the cinema club,
right?
Like, that's cool.
I appreciated that they had a Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 poster.
Oh yeah, I was like that. There's they have, oh god, it's like, I don't think it's Armageddon, but I think it's Deep Impact. I think that's one of the things that, like, it's like something like something ends, hope survives, and it was like the tagline. It's like a little bumper sticker that they have on one of the windows. Yeah, there's some really cool posters in that room. But yeah, the Rob Zombie Halloween 2, I was like, okay. Like, cinema clubs makes me feel like we should maybe, and this is no slight to Halloween 2 from Rob Zombie, because I like it, but, like, you feel like maybe more of the classics would be represented a little bit.
Halloween 2 opposed, is a classic.
But, I mean, in 2011? Like, we're only, like, a year or two removed from it at that point.
That would be 2 years out. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Halloween 2 was my Scream 4.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it just makes me realize, like, my God, you know, my high school experience was cool, but theirs is way cooler.
Well, yeah, they got Sidney Prescott and Gail Weathers to come to their cinema club meeting.
Yeah, right? I didn't get shit like that.
No.
Yeah, like, so for me, it's like they had some stuff to say. We're like, I don't know that 5 necessarily has a ton to say.
No, not really.
Not as pointedly as Scream 4 does. Like, and that's right. Not to say, like, you know, because obviously Scream 5 sort of reflects on, like, internet culture and, like, forums and things like that and the anonymity of online culture, where Scream 4 very much was about this entire generation of kids who basically, and it's not their fault. This isn't like me being an old man yelling at my lawn to get off my lawn.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, like, if I'm an 18-year-old kid right now and I'm trying to figure out the rest of my life, like, when we were kids, it was like, you go to college, you do this, you do that. These days, I don't even know that I would tell kids necessarily to go to college yet, like, because I don't know what the workforce looks like anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Why go put yourself $100,000 into debt to basically come out, make money, make a salary that you can't even live on, when you can go online and make YouTube videos and make $500,000 a year?
Right.
Like,
yeah, the problem is that that's like telling a kid to pursue acting because they're going to be the next Denzel Washington or something. It's like the person that breaks through as a YouTuber is so few and far between that, like, it's not.
Is it though? Because I'll tell you what, and this is what surprised me. And the only reason, like, I realized what influencer culture is about, because at my day job, we've been working with a lot of influencers, and you, like, I was shocked at the amount of influencers that are out there who have these really big followings that, like, and I think it's because we're older, so we're not as tuned into it.
Yeah, that's incredibly possible.
But we live, like, because we literally, and this is just in, like, fitness and in, like, fitness tech.
Yeah.
We had over 500 different people we worked with, and none of these people had less than, like, 200,000 followers on YouTube.
Holy cow.
Right? So, like, if you're a kid these days, like, why would you do the shit that your parents did? And, like, why, you know what I mean? Like, especially because you're already living your life out online anyway. Why not get paid for it?
Right.
So it's, to me, like, it's very interesting because in 2011, like, we were at the precipice of that, but it wasn't the way it is now. Like, there's, like, little YouTube kids who, like, their parents threw them on YouTube when they were, like, little because they were adorable. Right. Now those kids literally make $5 million a year and they have freaking channels on Sling. There's this one called Ryan and Friends.
Yeah.
And, like, this kid makes, like, $5 million a year. And he has merchandise. And he has, like, licensing. And all this stuff. And I'm just, what?
Yeah. Like, I will admit, I'm so far removed from all of that. So, like, if somebody says to me, like, I want to be an influencer, my reaction, of course, is like, what? No, get a real job, you know? But yeah, maybe they have more of a chance of that happening than I think.
Yeah. Like, I will never in my lifetime make $500,000 in a year. That's just never going to happen. No.
I won't even make $500,000 total in my lifetime.
Yeah. You know, so it's just like, it's so for me, like, to see that being reflected then, like, I get why maybe there was that disconnect with people, because it really wasn't quite where we were at yet.
Right. Right.
But if you release this story now, people are going to tell you you're too on the nose.
Yeah.
Because we're living it. We are absolutely living it.
Yeah.
Which is bananas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, so I don't know if that's a Kevin, like, is that a Kevin Williamson thing? Is it an Aaron Kruger thing? Like, I don't know. I don't know how Scream 4 kind of breaks down.
If I'm looking at the discographies, I would say it's a Kevin Williamson thing, and maybe it's not fair for me to credit one person and not the other. But one has sort of been a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of what he's been talking about, and the other one's name rhymes with Rerin Ruger.
How weird is it, though, to have a screenwriter involve a Kruger? Like, how amazing.
Yeah.
I just can't hate him because of that. I'm sorry.
I won't hate him because he wrote Reindeer Games, but is it why the Weinsteins hired him? That's what we really need to ask. Just like, what? Fuck, his name's Kruger? Sure, give him the job.
Exactly. Like, I should have changed my name to Kruger when I first started writing professionally about horror movies. I might be a big YouTube influencer right now.
You might be.
I could
be. As long as you're willing to sit in front of a shelf of DVDs. Because that's, right? I think, all you need to be a horror movie influencer.
I think you do. I think so. I mean, I have enough crap around my house. I could do it.
You could definitely put together a background and be a YouTuber. Yeah. Yeah.
My problem is now I have themed areas of our living room and dining room where, like, one table is specifically Halloween, one table is Scream.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, we have specific shelves on our entertainment center. So, yeah, I've spread it out. So I have to bring it back in. Maybe when we eventually move next year, like, maybe that'll be my thing. Although I still want to do my Wes Craven office. When I do my Wes Craven office, then we're on.
Okay. Good.
So I still have a few one sheets to collect, but I'm getting there.
Okay, good.
Yes. So yeah, so, like, it's interesting because I like the idea of bringing in new people, because, like, what else are you going to do to Sydney, Gale, and Dewey at this point, like, other than have them sort of be the adults? Because also, too, Scream is aimed towards teenagers. Who wants to watch, you know, Dewey and Gale basically having sort of a weird disconnect in their marriage? And that's the part that makes me sad, is because I know that that's, like, stuff that was going on in their real lives at that point.
Right, right.
And, like, I just have such a love for Courtney Cox and David Arquette as human beings that, like, I was genuinely bummed out when they split. I mean, they're still, like, best friends, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, I genuinely, when, like, very few, like, Hollywood divorces have really hit me hard, but that one hit me hard. But it was just nice because, like, watching them come together, like, through the Scream movies. And then Scream 4, you have them just splitting apart. And then 5 does it even more. Where...
Yeah, 5 is...
It's a gut punch, man. I still cry.
It's sad, yeah. But again, I don't want to spoil anything for 5 in case people haven't seen 5, but I think 5 earns the thing that it does with, like, that one line of dialogue.
Yeah. It was just, like, seeing sort of that reflected in this, like, why can't you just pretend to make Dewey and Gale happy? Like, why do we have to
for
have
one
script?
Movie?
So what, we could introduce, like, Deputy Judy, who has her lemon squares. And I actually really, I love Marley Shelton. I like Deputy Judy. I think Sheriff Judy comes into her own into a certain way in Scream 5 as well.
Yeah.
So this isn't me knocking the character, but I'm just like, she kind of just, like, there's this weird flirtation that's totally one-sided in this movie.
Yes.
It somehow becomes this weird rift that the movie doesn't need at all.
No, it's, again, it speaks a little bit to Like, we don't totally know what to do with our legacy characters. And yeah. I get it, because it's like in 2011 when this movie came out, and even when 5 came out, like, I think I was of the mind that, like, how could you possibly do a Scream movie without Sydney and Dewey and Gale? And I think 6 has kind of demonstrated that it is possible. But when this movie came out, I would have been incensed if they were like, it's Scream 4 and we have all new characters. So I get yeah. why they're there, but I also don't think it totally knows what to do with them.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because I think also too, like, just the disconnect of like Dewey being in a certain position within the community of Woodsboro and Gale sort of trying to figure out where her place is as like this truth teller, news seeker kind of person. That's enough conflict right there, because technically him being the sheriff, you know, in Woodsboro, like, he can't just tell her everything that's going on, because it's like a police thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right. He can't just like blurt out things to her like the way he would do in Scream, you know, 2 and 3. Like, one was sort of, some things were like accidental, which is part of the cute charm of Deputy Dewey.
Right. Right.
You know, so like that enough there was enough to disconnect their characters in a way that would still feel meaningful in comparison to the other movies, but didn't like try to bust up their marriage.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I do like the Axel F. Ringtone though. I will never not start singing that song. I always sing the Family Guy version of it though.
What's the Family Guy version?
Well, there's an episode of Family Guy when Peter goes back in time and
of course.
Yes, and ends up marrying Molly Ringwald.
Of course.
Yes, but there's like Cleveland, he starts singing, and he's like, and then Peter does it where he's like, and another. So we always sing it like that in our house. We actually sing Axel F quite a bit.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So also Beverly Hills Cop rules anyway. So
sure.
Yeah. But yeah, so every time I hear that song, it just puts a smile on my face. It's just a cute little fun thing for like a sheriff of a town to have that like as his ringtone. Remember ringtones? Ringtones were a thing.
I do remember. I was like excited to finally own a phone that could download a ringtone, and then I think I did it once and never again. So
what was your ringtone? Do you remember?
It was the
theme. I remember my first.
Yeah, it was the theme to Star Trek The Next Generation.
You're such a dork.
Are you sure about that? Because I'm pretty sure that made me sound super cool.
My first ringtone was Hey Ya from Outkast.
All right.
Yeah. Total dork too, but you know, in a different way. But yeah, I love that it was Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. Oh yeah. My gosh. That's amazing.
And this was in like 2010, probably. This was like when I finally got a phone that could have a ringtone, it was probably like 2010.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Mine was early 2000s. So.
Yeah, no, I could tell by the fact that it was Hey Ya.
Yeah, of course. That song was everywhere. Was like the Motorola phone thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Love it. Love it. So you were, I have to call out this because of our hilarious back and forth yesterday.
Oh, yes.
So I think we're both in agreement that Scream 4 visually looks like shit, though, right?
Yeah, I cannot.
It's weird.
I started watching it last night. I watched the rest of it today, and I had to like look up the cinematographer because I'm like, who shot this fucking movie? And it's Peter Deming, who like is right? a good cinematographer. Like,
and it's not even the compositions of the shots. Everything is so in soft focus.
Yeah,
like it literally looks like somebody just rubbed Vaseline on the lenses. Like, I don't know if that's the way that the raw camera footage looks, or if that was like what they did in like post. I would give my left arm to have access to the raw video footage.
Yeah.
To redo that. Because even these days now, you can sharpen footage. I pray to God if they ever release Scream 4 on 4K, please, if you are listening, Paramount, I will give you a blank check. You put any amount down. Just please sharpen that imagery, because it looks terrible. It looks like some sort of soap opera.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It does not look good.
The color timing is off in a lot of the sequences. The sound mix on that Blu-ray is awful too.
It really does a disservice to the movie. I think there's a lot of things working against it. I think the fact that you have Patrick Lussier not editing this movie hurts it. I think the fact that it looks kind of like dog shit kind of hurts it. I think there's some problems with the movie that do a disservice to it, that make me feel like, because as I was watching this, and maybe this is the time to say this, and I will apologize for saying it, because obviously I don't want to say a single negative thing about Wes Craven, especially on his last movie. But watching this movie, I'm like, oh, has he kind of lost his fastball?
Or did he just like forget his glasses at home or something?
Or did he just forget his glasses? Right, exactly. Because I think one of the things that Scream has going for it, one of the many things that the original Scream has going for it, and I would even argue Scream 2, is that it's so technically proficient. It's so good. It has an edge to it. And I don't think Scream 4 has the same edge.
I don't know if it's just like the Weinsteins were like, you know, we're bringing in these people for crew and stuff.
Right.
Like, I don't know if Lussier was, I mean, that might have been around the time when he was
directing movies, right? He's making Drive Angry around now, I think.
I would think that, I was about to say, I think that might have been around the time he was doing Drive Angry. Because
yeah, that came out in 2011 as well, so.
Yeah, because like I remember doing interviews at 2010 Comic-Con for Drive Angry.
Okay.
When Nicolas Cage looked into my soul, it was pretty crazy.
I mean, you've talked to Nicolas Cage. You've talked to Wes Craven. You're seeing YouTube twice.
I only got 10 minutes of Wes Craven. You know what I would have given for an hour?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I will tell you, one of my favorite memories of, like, interview memories that relates to Scream and everything is back when, like, COVID was going, and I had to do a Zoom interview with David Arquette for his documentary. Which is an amazing documentary. If you haven't seen it, it's called You Can't Kill David Arquette.
Yeah, it's really good.
I loved it, like, so much. Like, not even just as, like, a horror fan, but just, like, a wrestling fan. And just a fan of seeing somebody confronting things about mental health that people typically don't.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. So we were having this discussion. And, like, we started talking about Wes. Because they just announced Scream 5, and I know he was getting ready to, like, head off for it. I didn't want any kind of info on that. But I wanted to talk to him about Wes. And he, like, his eyes welled up.
Hmm.
Which then, my eyes welled up. And, like, I swear to God, like, I was, like, in that moment, I was, like, I want nothing more. Because, like, him and his wife are, like, they're producers, and they produce, like, documentaries and things like that. And I'm, like, I want nothing more in my life right now than to make a documentary on Wes Craven with David Arquette.
Yeah.
Like, the love that he had for that man, that he has for that man, was, like, so pure and so real. Because I think so many people treated Arquette a very certain way in Hollywood that Wes never did that to him.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, so as much as I'm, like, so grateful I got my 10 minutes with Wes, and I've talked to so many amazing people throughout my career, but, like, seeing him react to talking about Wes, like, is one of my favorite moments of my entire career. Where, like, I'm just so glad I had that moment with him, you know, and it, like, it meant the world to me.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But yeah, Patrick Lussier would have cut the shit out of this movie.
Well, so right. I mean? So that's the question. Is it the material? Is it the lack of having the same technicians at his side? Or is it that Wes had lost his edge a little bit by 2011? Or is it a confluence of all three?
I think there's a point where, like, in 2011, post My Soul to Take, you know, Wes probably was kind of floating a little bit, because I don't think anybody knew what to do with him. He's fucking Wes Craven, though. But, like, so I'm guessing Weinstein's kind of like, we want to do another Scream movie. And he's like, okay, sure, why not? But I'm guessing that they probably exerted a heck of a lot more control over him at this point.
Yes.
Than they did when, like, Scream 2 and 3 were happening. Like, I'm sure Scream 1, there was a little bit more because it was a gamble at that point.
Yeah.
But 2 and 3, like, how are they going to argue with them?
Right.
Like, the series was a success. He was a success. So he had way more leverage. We're coming into this one, he has a lot less leverage.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as much as I hate to admit it, like, that stuff matters.
Sure.
You know? Like, to be really honest, like, I get why, like, Carpenter kind of walked away after the ward.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, he's John fucking Carpenter.
Right.
Why should he have to, like, dance and play games for people?
Right.
Like, he could stay home and play video games and be just as fine.
Right.
and do it on his own terms. Like, why make these guys who literally molded the landscape of modern horror do these stupid, ridiculous dances because everything is so nickeled and dimed now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the question. Like, there's very few directors out there who kind of get carte blanche anymore. The only two that I can think of that work in the horror spectrum that, like, pretty much can do whatever they want is James Wan and Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of, like, many others. Like, I know Ari Aster kind of got to run wild with Beau Is Afraid, which I haven't seen yet.
I haven't either.
I don't care. I wish I did.
No, I'm with you.
I'm going to get there, but I just...
So will I, but it's taken a lot to get me to go out to a 3-hour homework assignment.
Yeah, that's just basically going to leave me with anxiety.
Right.
I
know what that, like, feels like. I don't need Ari Aster to tell me.
Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe at this point, like, after, like, we'll see how the triple threat of Pearl, X, and Maxine is going to work out for Ty.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, A24 is such a different entity than any other company out there because they do actually let their directors go and do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you saw it with the Daniels for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Very few studios are A24.
Right.
You know, so, and A24 wasn't even an entity back at this point. So back then, everything was far more controlled because it's always about, look, we all want to make good movies, but they also want to make profitable movies. You know, unfortunately, it's show business. You know, and so I think Wes just didn't have as much say in what happened with Scream 4 as he thought he would. And it's a bummer. And I think you can see it. But I think the movie overcomes a lot of it. Because it should be way... To be honest, I feel like the movie should be way worse than it is. Because I was not expecting a lot, to be really... Frank, going into that first screening.
Sure.
I really wasn't. I heard the stories. You know, I was like, okay. I'm like, I just hope I like it. I think it was my mindset going, you know, I was like, all right, I just hope I like it.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, and it blew me away in ways I wasn't expecting. And like, so for it to have worked, the things that work about it work as well as they do is kind of a miracle, considering all of the things that Wes was dealing with and that cast. And the crew, you know, right, I mean, what a shit show.
Right. Yeah. Again, he had cast members dropping out even after production. He had cast members dropping out right before production. He, you know, one of the things that I kind of associate with Scream movies, especially the Wes Craven Scream movies, because now we have to sort of differentiate, is... And even with slasher films in general, is like set pieces. And I think Scream 4, you know, one of my frustrations with it is that it really only has like one, except for the ending, it really only has like kind of the one good set piece. And that's the parking garage, which weirdly enough is a reworking of something he already did in Cursed. And Cursed almost does it better.
I don't agree with the set piece part.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you what, the balls that it took to do the scene with Jill, I'm sorry, I cackle like...
Are you talking
maniac.
About the ending?
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's like, and I specified, like, except for the ending, it really only has one other set
piece.
Oh,
okay. I see. For me, like, ending means like in the hospital.
No, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
The tacked on second ending.
which doesn't totally work.
No, I get it. Yeah. I don't think we need it. Right. I would have loved the ambiguity of ending it with Jill being carted away. Be like, did she really get away with this? Like, I would have loved to see, like, Jill being in Scream 5 and, like, dealing with her becoming this new Sydney, but Kirby's really the new Sydney, and, like, that back and forth. Like, what if that would have turned Kirby into Scream, like, into, I almost said Scream Face. Into Ghost Face.
Better name. Like, this tough, Scream Face.
Yeah.
They should have just gone with that.
To, like, Scream Face. Where, like, Jill is, like, trying to, like, live out this, quote-unquote, like, pure and popular, like, lifestyle, and then Kirby's like, no, I'm gonna come here and fuck it all up and, you know, become Ghostface, because look what you and your friends did to me.
Well, like, and that's Kirby doesn't know that Jill is in on it, right?
But she would have at some point, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm just, you know, spitballing here. Sure. But like that, I would have loved the ambiguity of the camera lights like popping off in Jill's face, her getting toted away, and that was that.
And I think, like, that was talked about as an ending, right?
I think that was how the movie was supposed to end.
Right. With, and like, a mention that Sydney is still alive and Jill kind of, like, panicking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there was something, like, in the ambulance.
Right.
But, like, the wine scenes, of course, are like, nope, we need something more.
Right, exactly.
They do.
Yeah.
And here we are, you know.
And, you know,
it's fine.
The defibrillator to the head is fun, and don't fuck with the original is a good line. So it's not like it has nothing going for it. It just doesn't totally work. It works
Dewey
better.
Getting the shit, like, beat out of him with a bedpan is also fun.
Right. And it was supposed to go on, because again, if you watch the deleted scenes, like, there's even more after that. And Wes Craven was smart enough to be like, no, the movie's over. Let's just end it on Jill's face.
I get it.
We were talking about set pieces. No,
the garage scene for me, I freaking love it. First of all, Alison Brie is like a gift to this movie, because like now, because everything is so nostalgic for the 90s, I probably at least twice a week say, you were my 90s. No joke. I wanted to say, I begged to interview Courtney Cox for Scream 6. I wanted that so much. Because I love Courtney a lot. Like, I know it's not cool to like Friends anymore, but I watch Friends a lot when I'm working, because TBS runs it all the time, whatever. We're apparently supposed to hate it, and that's fine. And I get it. It's definitely got a very small view of New York. It's very underrepresentative of minorities. I totally get it. I agree with you 1,000% that, like, literally the only Black character that they ever brought in was Aisha Tyler.
Right.
Some of the stuff that they dealt with like LGBTQ characters didn't age as well, but hey, that was like the first TV show I think I remember them even talking about things alongside like maybe Ellen. And then of course Will and Grace came along and stuff like that. So I get it. The criticism's totally valid, but like, it's still, I watch it. I adore it, but I really was like, I wanted an interview so much so I could just be like, I'm going to say this the most lovingly way possible, but you were my 90s because she was. We just watched Masters of the Universe over the weekend.
Nice.
Because it was on MGM Plus, and I was like, oh my god, Masters of the Universe is on.
Yeah.
So like, Alison Brie to me is like, she's right up there with Kirby in this movie for me, because also like, I also said, I'm always like, oh fuck me, wow. It's like, she's like, she has great freaking dialogue, and her delivery is perfect.
And she manages to create a character, I think, in a pretty short amount of time that, like, is memorable. And which isn't to say that the movie doesn't do that in other places, because I think Deputy Judy does that. I think there's a handful of people that do it.
Olivia, not so much, but
that's the thing. For as high as the body count is in the movie, there aren't that many memorable characters, you know.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because I've spent more time with it that I've kind of grown, like, you know, I've sort of grown into it. But yeah, like my favorite moment in that whole parking lot sequence is when she's in the car, she's already hung up the phone, and the phone starts to ring again. She just looks at it and she goes, no. And like, seriously, how many problems in the Scream movies would be solved if somebody just looked at their phone and they were like, no. Like, just no, I'm not giving, I am not giving you my time, Ghostface. We are done, said that publicist. And it's so perfect. And it's like, it's like this tiny little moment, but I love it so much.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, because I know this is another problem that most people have. Do you have a problem with the fuck Bruce Willis moment?
I kind of do.
And I don't.
Okay.
But tell me. I'm curious.
Well, I've never liked it because I think it's going for a laugh where there shouldn't be one. And I have even more of a problem with it after reading a little bit about it and Wes Craven talking about, like, well, that's based on this real thing that happened where this guy was alive after, you know, being stabbed in the head. And I think the moment is going for something that's genuinely horrifying and would achieve it. Like him staggering around with blood running into his eyes, I think is a true horror moment. And then I think it gets stepped on with this goofy fuck Bruce Willis. But
yeah, I don't hate it because okay. I mean, frankly, too, because like also those guys, like they are sort of like having a hilarious conversation ahead of time.
Sure.
And like, what would your, you know, I mean, I would love if my last words would be something super profound and being like, you know, tell Brian I love him, or you know what I mean? Like, but if I'm literally just having a conversation about Bruce Willis and movies, it might be something as stupid as that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, everybody says, like, that's like the worst movie in the entire Scream franchise. And I'm just like, is it though? Like,
no, I wouldn't go that far. I just, yeah. I don't
I
love
get it.
It
because it should be a moment of horror.
Yes.
But I also think, too, like, audiences at this point versus where audiences were in 96, like, that line in a 96 Scream does not work.
Sure.
That line in, like, a 2011 Scream movie works better, I think. But I get it because that moment should be just like your mouth should be agape in horror.
Yeah.
As this guy is stumbling around after being right. stabbed in the freaking forehead.
Right. It's, and you're it's, like, it's oh awful. My God. And I would argue that Anthony Anderson and Anna Brody have gotten enough laughs already that, like, they don't need one more.
Yeah.
Should we Not that they're, like, so hilarious, but. Yeah, maybe. To me, it almost stands out as like an Anthony Anderson, like, hey, would it be okay if I said this? But that's just
I'm
me
almost
theorizing.
Wondering if he would, yeah, because like, also like, and this is a weird thing, didn't he get like accused of like rape
Ooh.
Years ago?
I honestly I don't know.
Like, see, and I feel like
I
that
hate
was
that we
thing.
Can't
like,
keep
maybe
that
that's
shit
a buck.
Straight anymore.
Yeah, I feel like it might have been debunked, but I think it might have been something that happened on Hustle and Flow. Which is also a pretty fantastic movie. Which
in
is tough.
2004, Anderson was accused of raping a woman on the set of the film Hustle and Flow. The case would later okay. be dismissed for unknown reasons.
Okay. So that's also like a thing where I'm just like, I like Anthony Anderson, but I keep him at a distance because I don't quite know
sure.
about that situation. But I remember like that happening because I was so excited for Hustle and Flow. Because I love Craig Brewer, and I was just like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. And that was the movie. I fell in love with Taraji and Terrence Howard. And I was yeah. just, like, so excited. And it had DJ Qualls in it. And I was just like, oh God, I love that movie. I love that movie.
I don't think I've seen it since the theater, to be honest. I liked it. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but I feel like I saw it and then I haven't seen it since.
I rewatched it during COVID.
Okay.
It still holds up. It was so good. But I, you know, I saw, I think I saw that one in theaters twice. I saw 8 Mile maybe like 4 or 5 times.
Oh my gosh. That's another one I haven't seen since the theater.
I love movies about rap. I don't know what to tell
yeah,
you. I'm sorry,
I like both theater. Of them and for whatever reason, haven't revisited them. Did you ever see, Bodied?
Yes. I hate Joseph Kahn, but I loved Bodied.
That's another one I saw
that
one
guy.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah, that one was, it was a little tough because some of the language in that was like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of the nature of the rap battles that they were
sure.
kind of, oh, okay.
As someone yeah. who's been in many a rap battle, I can attest to that.
Me too. It's yeah. it's a tough life, Patrick. It's
sure.
a tough life. We should have a rap battle during our last Wes
Craven
episode.
That's a great idea.
We're totally not going to do that.
No, we're not.
Oh shit, that would be amazing
but
though.
Let's tease it just to get people to listen
right right? Rap battle, final episode of Craven Craven. We're gonna go off. Yeah, so like I totally get the criticism of it, but it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I think at that point, I mean, because like the thing is with the Scream movies, there's always so much back and forth between the sheer horror of certain moments and then the chuckle.
Yeah.
Because there is like this undercurrent of sort of dark comedy to a lot of it.
Absolutely.
You know, so but everybody's like, oh my God, that was like the moment that killed the movie. I was like, did it though? Really? Did it really?
Again, I wouldn't go that far. I just don't like it. But
yeah.
Is it a deal breaker? No, you know, because again, in 2011, there was a lot of stuff that was a deal breaker for me. And now I like more than I don't.
Which brings us, as a fan, maybe?
I have relaxed perhaps as a fan, and I've come to honestly, and it's a testament and a compliment to you that like your fandom of this movie has like kept the fire going enough that I've been willing to revisit it a few times and like give it more chances and have learned to appreciate it a lot through your eyes.
And in return, that was probably the reason I went back and revisited the Rob Zombie Halloweens.
See, there you go. So, you know. Halloween 2 is my Scream 4. I meant it.
Friendship, everybody. Friendship. so, finale, or sort of the setup of that third act.
Yeah.
That whole shebang.
Yeah.
And also now, too, I think I remember, because I can't keep up with everything, but I'm pretty sure I think Emma Roberts is problematic now.
Oh.
I think she beat the crap out of her boyfriend or something.
Oh, boy.
I know. I can't like anybody anymore. But let's... Putting a pin in that for the moment.
She was arrested for domestic violence earlier this month, it says. But what month is it talking about? Is it talking about this month?
Is it this month?
No, it can't be. It just...
No.
No. This was in 2021, maybe?
Okay.
Okay.
Was that before her pizza movie with Hayden Christensen? Shout out to Adam.
I don't think it was. Shout out to Adam. and it was her boyfriend was Evan Peters.
Oh, really?
That's the one that she was arrested for beating up, apparently.
Oh, that's intriguing. So they must have met through
American Horror Story. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will say like, in terms of ghost face characters, like Charlie's kind of just a throw. Like I love Mia Culkin, as much as the next person. But Jill is the superior ghost face in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie is just kind of a patsy, you know, and.
But he doesn't. But the best part about it is he doesn't even know he's a patsy. He's walking around until that moment. Thinking he owns that entire scene. Again, total horror film, bro. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh no, ha ha, it's all about me. Sorry, you gotta go. I'm stabbing you in the heart.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And then the entire setup of her basically staging her attacks and stuff is phenomenal. I'm sorry. It's like probably the best sequence in horror in 2011. And I will stand by that.
I would have to look at what else came out in 2011, but I won't argue with you.
Yeah. I mean, we had some, like, that was a pretty good year because we had, like, You're Next.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Then I might argue with you, but it's a great sequence. And
it's up there with the Blender in the Head.
Blender in the Head might win for me. But
I get it.
Not to take anything away from your love of the sequence, because it is a fantastic sequence and very funny. And again, in terms of like with, you know, the movie making a joke about the lengths that people will go to be famous, like here it is literalized, you know, and it's a lot of fun. And I have even come around on Emma Roberts's performance in the movie, because you and I have differed in the past on Emma Roberts, and I would probably call myself less of a fan than you. But I do think she's actually really good in the movie.
Yeah. And also too, like for one thing I will say is like, so we have like t-shirts and it's become like this big thing where like they talk about how RoboCop shot a dude in the dick, right? Where's Jill Roberts's t-shirt for shooting a dude in the dick?
Right.
I mean, it's pretty harsh though. Like, you're in high school, you do stupid crap in high school. Like, you know, I'm not, you know, saying what Trevor did was right, but like,
yeah.
He gets it the worst in this movie. It's like he gets shot in the dick and then he has to deal with that for like a good 35 seconds. And then she shoots him in the head.
Right.
So like Trevor really, like, I hate Trevor. Like, who invited you, Trevor? But like, also poor Trevor.
Well, Trevor ends up being just like such a weird non-entity, like as a performance, and nothing against that actor. But like, he's obviously meant to be a red herring. And then ends up getting shot in the dick, which is pretty funny. You know, again, when you embrace the dark comedy of the whole Jill arc, the shooting in the dick is pretty inspired.
Yeah. And also, too, what's interesting is because we talked about this, I think once I mentioned this, and we were like, oh, whoa, really? And then I wrote about it in my piece for Scream 4 in 2021 when the 10th anniversary came out. But like, if you watch that entire finale, because we talk about remakes, everybody is color coded characters in the finale of the original Scream, which is amazing.
Which I like, so did not catch. And I think texted you something about it like a few months ago. And you're like, yeah, no shit. And I was like, oh, all right, then sorry about that.
Well, the thing that always stood out to me is when they, because like obviously them putting Trevor in the pantry and pulling him out is a nod to Mr. Prescott.
Yeah.
But I even remember the first time seeing it, I was like, he's dressed like Mr. Prescott. That's weird.
Yeah.
And then like, as I go back and watch it, I was like, oh, she's wearing like the same shirt that like Skeet's wearing. Okay. And then he's dressed like, okay. All right. Interesting color pattern choices here. You know, and basically, oh my goodness, what's not Charlie? Who's the other one? Robbie Mercer is dressed basically like Randy.
Right.
You know, with the bright green shirt and everything. So I that kind of stuff, I'm like, yes, give it to me. did you, by the way, we were talking about Anthony Anderson's character. Did you know that his whole character name is Anthony Perkins?
I read that. I did not know that. I mean, obviously I knew that the Perkins was a shout out, but then to find out that his first name is also Anthony is pretty funny.
If I ever did get to interview Aaron Kruger, I'd be like, who named the cops Anthony Perkins and Ross Hoss? Because I always wondered about that.
That could be a Kruger. I don't know.
I don't know. But also, I know we have to kind of wrap up soon. But how non-factor, like non-exist, like why is Mary McDonald in this movie?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I don't know exactly. It was originally supposed to be Lauren Graham. Lauren Graham quit a few days into production because of script changes. So the part went to Mary McDonnell.
But that character just sucks.
Didn't go to the premiere because they cut her out of the movie so much.
She's in it too much already.
Yeah, well, the part is cursed. And her death is kind of meaningless when you consider who's doing it. I mean, I just feel like it should weigh on this movie a little bit more heavily that like Jill is willing to murder her own mother.
Yeah.
And it kind of is tossed away in a line of dialogue.
Yeah. I will say though that the knife through the mail slot is pretty awesome though.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good, I guess it's a good death for her. It's just another example of like somebody who I feel like should register more the way that like Alison Brie or Deputy Judy does.
Yeah.
Some of these characters, or who was the one you mentioned? The third friend who's like a non-entity.
Oh, Olivia.
Olivia. Yeah. Like there are these characters who should, and that's like a fine sequence and would, again, register more if that character was, if we gave a shit at all, you know, but the whole, like, I never said it was your closet, like, okay, sure. But because that character just doesn't mean shit, and it, maybe this is just me, but like the actor that they cast looks so much like the girl in the bathroom from Scream.
Yeah.
That I was like distracted. Like, was that intentional? Probably not. But like, What's the famous thing that she, you know, this series better than anybody, but what's the thing that she says in the bathroom? Like,
Oh my God, why can't I think of it? Oh my God, why can't I think of it?
I could see the face that she makes in the mirror.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, whatever.
Something is so out. Homicide is a much better, oh my God.
Form of therapy.
I'm going to totally get my screen card revoked after
this. I don't think you will, because, again, you know more about this franchise than just about anybody. Except for maybe Aaron Kruger.
Aaron Kruger, yeah, I can't compete. I mean, again, his last name's Kruger.
That's right.
I will say the other sort of detrimental aspect of Scream 4 versus the first Scream 3 movies, the first three Scream movies, I can't talk, is the fact that this is the first movie to use digital effects.
Right, right.
Bummer summer.
Yeah. Yeah, because it doesn't totally work.
Nope. Like the Lucy Hale death at the beginning, I swear to God, I feel like it's another, I think it's a stunt person and they digitally imposed her face on top of that body.
Yeah.
I really think, because it looks weird, right?
There's something off about it, but I always have just attributed it to the weird shitty photography.
But the coloring between her face and the body is totally different.
So. I would have to rewatch it to be sure.
Oh no.
And it'll be a while before I rewatch it, unfortunately. But how many times would you say you've seen this movie?
I would say probably at least 50.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Dude, I rewatch movies all the time.
No, I know you do, but I didn't think you rewatched Scream 4 that many times.
I mean, because I always will put stuff on when I'm working. So I mean, in terms of the first two Scream movies, especially because they're on digital, so it's easy just to put them on now.
Right.
Because they're on my Vudu. Is in the hundreds. Wow. No joke.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so where does this rank with the other Screams for you?
You know, it's pretty high. I think for me, it's, you know, three's in terms of if we're going with the original four.
Yeah.
I can't put the new Screams into a ranking with the old Screams. I'm weird like that.
Okay.
But for me, it's one is going to be always the best.
Yeah.
For me, I think two and four are kind of tied because I think that they both do some really clever things in terms of what sequels come to the table with in
general.
Right. And then there's three. And I still love three.
Yeah.
Like me putting three in last place, you know, most people hate three. I love three.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, I think for me it's on a technical level, two is better, but I think four has more to actually say about the genre, which is what I love the most about one.
Yeah.
Because that was holy shit, you can do this in a movie. Where two is sort of making a statement about trauma, a statement about the character of Sydney and about the after effects. It's not, and about sequels to a degree, but I think because you've had so many years of sequels between when Scream 2 came out versus when Scream 4 came out, I think there's a lot more material to kind of work with. And audiences get smarter about this stuff. The internet has made us all a lot more aware about things in movies, even average moviegoers who, you know, don't obsess about this stuff the way a lot of us do. Who have real lives and, you know, go and live about their business and do that kind of stuff. So.
And I think it is all this stuff that the movie has to say about the genre that I've come to appreciate over the years.
Yeah. What's your ranking?
I mean, I would probably still give the advantage to two over four. Yeah. Just again, because Wes was still just so on fire technically and was working with that same team from the first movie. So he's still got that thing where he's directing like he's got something to prove. So I probably like two a little bit more, but I mean.
Totally get it.
I would put four. Yeah, probably behind that. And then
there's
a pretty significant drop and then three for me.
You're just looking for a fight, aren't you?
I swear I'm not. I just
no, I can't, I know. I'm
except for like except for Parker Posey, I just can't find a way into three.
You just gotta relax, bro. That's
I guess. I guess.
You just gotta relax with it. Just gotta go with it.
Well, we should probably wrap up because I gotta.
You got a whole life and things.
I have a whole life and things, but luckily we don't have to like have a big meaningful wrap up because we are doing another episode.
We are. It's
so we
it's
don't
coming,
have
guys.
To like eulogize Wes Craven or anything in this final episode.
Oh man, dude, I'm gonna try to keep it together.
Okay,
I'm gonna do my best.
I won't be able to do it anyway, so it's really the pressure's entirely on you.
Fantastic. Okay, great.
And you're welcome.
Wonderful. But yeah, it's been a journey. This has been really fun.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. It's been like just again, fun to revisit so many of these movies, to gain new appreciation for so many of these movies, to fill in like certain gaps that I had. You know,
just saying, like, you know, sadly, the anniversary of Toby's passing is August. That might be a really nice month to start hanging with Toby Huber.
I mean, you know, you're not wrong, except we have to start with eggshells, and that's going to be a challenge.
The thing is, what I'm excited about doing that the most is that I do have way more blind spots when it comes to Toby. Like the things that I've seen of him and I love. Like,
okay.
I've watched so much.
Sure.
So I am really excited about the blind spots, the good and the bad.
Okay.
I am.
The good news is there are no bad.
Yeah. See? Already a win.
Because for me, every Toby Hooper movie is Scream 3.
There you go. What does that mean?
It just means that I like everything.
Oh, okay. Well, you said Scream 3. You hate Scream 3. What does that mean?
It's for you, I mean. Like.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm slow. What do you want from me?
It's okay.
But yeah, so we will probably be back next month.
Yeah.
For the wrap-up of Craven.
Yeah.
It's an end of an era. Era.
We
didn't have an era in this episode. I had to work it in somehow.
I'm glad. I'm glad that you were able to work it in.
Thanks. That's what she said.
We got both of them. All right, good.
Woohoo!
Well, thank you for talking about Scream 4 with me and for talking about Wes Craven with me. Again, we're not going to get emotional right now, but
no, I'm trying not to.
Okay, but so, yeah, we will be back for one more Craven.
Yes, it's gonna be a fun one, folks.
It will. Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Heather.
Thank you, Patrick.